Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
Alex, I would like to know, what are the chances of getting, you know the rest of this question?
It's impossible.
Bryce Harper.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Okay. Let's move along.
Middays on the Score.
Awkward, Joe Madden and Jim Deshays. A little Q&A with some submitted questions there. And it's impossible. It's not going to happen. Your slogans for the 2019 Chicago
Cubs. Put on a t-shirt.
Instead of it's going to happen, not going to happen.
It's impossible.
Not going to work here anymore.
You know, this offseason is ground to a halt, a lot like the last handful of off seasons, and there's, you know, a bunch of activity late as spring training gets going, all this kind of stuff. And even MLB's own Twitter handle is tweeting about the inaction of this offseason, that nothing's going on. And it's kind of a, I don't know if it's a subtle nod or just like completely sweeping under the rug the fact that their teams, MLB's teams, aren't doing anything to make themselves better. Whether that's the state of play in Major League Baseball or whether that's something that's maybe more than that, maybe that's something that's being talked about one way or another, not necessarily collusion, but definitely some sort of dialogue between teams about what players are and aren't worth.
Well,
you know, in terms of their value specifically.
I think a team, an average MLB team right now of which you're talking would quibble and say, what we do is we get better internally, that we draft and we develop so we can get better without needing to pay somebody who's leaving another team at age 29 or 30.
Yeah, I know that they could be right about that too, if their own players do improve. But the fact remains that whether, and this is what's got me as upset as anything else. It's not necessarily the waiting for players to sign. It's the wild scything reports that go back and forth between, and it's not from local guys. It's mostly from the larger, you know, national publications back and forth. Oh, they're in on him completely. They're not talking at all. And it's about the same guy and about the same teams.
It's because there's only a handful of agents who are giving stuff out in dribs and drabs that benefits their client.
But if it's dribs and drabs, why is it going back and forth so wildly? You know, I mean, part of it is you had Joe Madden, was it last night, saying they're not getting Bryce Harper. It's not happening. Well, part of the reaction to wherever Bryce Harper signs, and if it's right that an offer to Manny Machado is going to look a lot more like 7 years and $200 million than it will 10 years and $300 million, and if it's right that Bryce Harper's offer is going to look a lot more like that, a lot less like a 10-year, $300 million deal that the Nationals reportedly offered to him before the season closed, which I don't necessarily believe, then shouldn't every team with a reasonable ask to add one of those players and the money to do it, they're going to get to their fan
every
conventions.
Team has the money to do it.
All right. They're going to get to their
every
even,
team.
Even if you want to take them at their word for having to stay underneath the competitive balance tax, aren't they all going to have to answer for the fact that these guys signed perhaps under market deals and why you weren't in on that under market deal?
Not unless you have a smoking gun of emails saying
I mean from their fans.
Like back to,
no. Why weren't you there for we talked about this with the Yankees. Why weren't you there for Manny Machado at $22 million? Why weren't you there for Bryce Harper at 25?
Especially as ticket prices have gone up even for the worst teams, because fans buy the rebuild. Because of the Cubs, because of the Astros, the
I'm
teams,
talking about teams that don't have to rebuild.
They're
talking about the Dodgers, talking about the Cubs.
Maybe it's because fans have seen a lot of these be bad contracts.
The first 3 years?
That outside of the Miguel Cabrera deal, that in general, maybe they say, look, we don't want a Pujols deal. We don't need the...
Pujols signed when he was 45.
Yep, yeah,
I mean, the only guy that really parallels, and he does, is the Jason Hayward contract, which, you know, for the first handful of years, hasn't been very good, has been very expensive, and might be the one that's preventing the Cubs from going out and signing either Harper or Machado. There are those that would tell you that baseball needs, you know, fixes here, and not just the stuff in February that's going to change pace of play, because every February the last 4 or 5 seasons you've had a new rule put in play about whether it's replay or pace of play or time, all this kind of stuff. So we'll see, you know, in about a month what happens there. But a rule about making a deadline for free agent signing, I mean, we're at a point where those who think smartly about baseball are trying to usher in artificial deadlines for teams to do something already, which I don't think it's a good idea either, to make this random deadline somewhere in the offseason for free agent signings. Like, what do you... You hit the deadline. What are you going to do with players that don't sign?
Yeah, you can't.
They're not allowed to sign?
Yeah, is that it?
You're out of the league?
You can't dictate how teams do their business as long as they are not illegally colluding against the collective bargaining agreement or the NLRB to try to drive down the market. They are effectively adopting similar practices because they all see where there's been waste before, except the Brewers, apparently. Milwaukee says, yeah, we're going to actually spend money on players that will make our team better and more competitive for this given season.
Even then, though, they found, I mean, in this offseason, they found Yasmani Grandal for a lot less than I thought Yasmani Grandal would get. Maybe not in average annual value, but definitely in terms of length. And I guess there's a mutual option for a second year there. They went out on a limb for Lorenzo Cain and put things together there. I mean, you're seeing reports, and Matt Gelb of The Athletic was on with Mullion Hall earlier this morning saying that it's not necessarily true, that the Phillies are in on both Machado and Harper. I mean, you tell me the next time a report comes out that doesn't benefit the ownership stance, that doesn't benefit, you know, just one side of things. And I'll be happy to listen to it and see how it really affects the marketplace.
I find interesting the side of this that you talked to about the way you've got a handful of national reporters talking to two agents that represent everybody and a couple of executives.
Teams.
So there's a high level of variance in some of the reporting in some of this stuff. When you are a team, and we know for sure, and I heard Gelb talk about this, there are conversations going on with teams involved that we don't know and will never know. That there are teams that simply don't find it in their best interest to have it out there that they're involved. When you're the White Sox, you can understand why if Kenny wants to pick up a phone, well, Rick is doing all the work, and if Kenny wants to pick up a phone and say, hey, you know, we're this, because you know, sort of the old school baseball people, if a team like the White Sox that figures they can increase their profile a little bit and at least keep their name out there and remind.
Well, Rick talked about that a couple of weeks ago. I mean, Han said that the perception of being in on Manny Machado now may help us with future free agents later. Or even help us with our own team this year.
They need the advertising. They need to remind the rest of the baseball world that they exist and explain to people what they're doing and how competitive they're trying to be when they reach their window because of the deals that they made. But there are any number of teams that will be saying, that are still at the table, that don't have an executive calling Scott Boras, that don't have an executive calling John Heyman or Ken Rosenthal or Bruce Levine, that executive said, look, don't sign anything until talking to us. And that could be Brian Cashman.
Mm-hmm.
It could be any team that says...
Farhan Zaidi.
Sure.
Yeah.
Say, don't, whatever you're doing, don't sign anything until you talk to us.
Well, it's interesting then that in this offseason, one that's, you know, kind of revolutionary, and that you got two 26-year-olds who are at the top of their game, both of them looking for contracts that could completely break the bank or set the record, that you've got a willingness, I guess, to just let two teams, three teams, you know, the Phillies, the White Sox, if you want to call the Nationals a part of the Bryce Harper negotiations, you can. I'm sure you could find somebody else. They're going to let two or three teams kind of dictate the marketplace, and others, whether that's, like you said, the Dodgers or the Yankees, just get to lay back in the weeds and go, we'll be here for you. We have this kind of conversation ready to happen. We have this kind of cash ready to commit. Just you do your negotiating there. You get sold. Go ahead and get sold on the White Sox. Go ahead and get sold on the Phillies. But allow us to come over the top. Yeah,
we're still here. We still are who we are. And we're going to make sure that we're not, that we don't give up our last rights here. We're going to give our last shot at you once everything is all said. And you might just be ready to put pen to paper. Don't do it before you give us a call. See, that's when you get these, that you talk about artificial deadlines, where you see the money come up. Because it's possible. It's because you don't know. He could be sitting on a deal for 7 years and $250 million, and just as he's about to sign, the agent gets a text and says, we got 10 years, $340. You don't know.
Those kind of deals, though, and that kind of waiting has been pushing out the lower middle class of player, at least in terms of earning value, for a while now. And it's, I mean, Jake Arrieta was tweeting about this, what, 2-3 days ago, something like that? You know, pay attention, kids, guys in your first 3 years of service. Like, this is where things are headed as a journeyman, as a guy who can give a little bit of value one way or another. I mean, those roles are increasingly going to, the 4A player is kind of a myth, but it's that guy. It's that type of guy who gets those jobs because the compensation on that dude is league minimum or maybe just a scratch above.
There's a strike coming.
Yes.
The question is, there's no doubt in my mind that there's a strike coming. The question is whether or not they're going to have a tightly woven enough fabric to make it work, because it almost never works. Marvin Miller isn't here to hold the rank and file together. They don't have that guy in charge. They don't have Marvin Miller.
You know, the average major league contract went down from last season to this past season for like the third time. Not by much. Not by a lot.
Yeah, there's going to
be just a little bit.
There's sacrifice involved in these labor movements, and the sacrifice will be people giving up money now. I don't know how leveraged some of these guys are, but giving up money now to help these guys who come later. They're not going to reap the benefits of it. The guys who suffer now are not going to be the better for it. It's a matter of your legacy and your commitment to the player, but the storm is coming.
Yeah, I mean, teams have money, and even if you play in the artificial ceiling of a collective bargaining tax, I guess it's not artificial because there are consequences to it, even if major league teams can pay it. The Phillies are on the hook for about $125 million this season so far, committed to payroll. 72, 75-ish next season. So in adding both, if it happens, you're adding what, $50 million to $125? You are still $30 million underneath your 206, your collective bargaining number for this season. There are plenty of teams with space and money. Every team has money, but there are plenty of teams with space that have the option to do this, the ability to do this.
This segment's brought to you by the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer. Cold and flu season's around the corner, and people with conditions like heart disease, asthma, and cancer are especially at risk. Use the thermometer that you and your family can trust, the Exergen Temporal Scanner. Its accuracy is backed by more than 70 clinical studies. It's the leading thermometer used in hospitals. Versatile young Cub Ian Happ joins the Bernstein and McKnight Show next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
He's got the power to give the Cubs the lead with one swing. First and third, one away, seventh inning.
Here's a drive, deep left field. It's got a chance. Gone! Ian Happ, a three-run homer. Cubs lead 3-2.
Those multi-run homers are good, aren't they? I believe it was Theo Epstein who once said, launch angle is not a fad.
Yeah, we're fans over here.
Yeah, big fans of launch angle. And Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs will be in town for the Cubs convention this weekend. You can find him on Twitter at @IHAP_1. And he is with us now on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Ian, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys doing today?
We're good.
Wonderful.
So I'm looking at this and seeing that it's going to be a little different convention for you because you are debuting some artwork on which you have partnered with the artist Patrick Vale, the Through My Eyes at WrigleyThroughMyEyes.com. This series, and watch the short video that you put together. This is some intricate and interesting stuff. What motivated you to do this?
Well, I just kept having the same experience over and over, bringing people onto the field for the first time, and they would walk down there, people that had been to Wrigley, countless times, that when they stepped on the field for the first time, it was like they had this awe-inspiring moment of, oh my goodness, I'm down here. And you can really feel the aura when you're on the field. So I wanted to capture that and give the fans this player perspective that they don't get to see very often.
Is it, well, in watching the video, it feels like there's an overwhelming sense of, I don't know whether it's history or nostalgia or, you know, importance or just achievement for you. Does it boil down to one central feeling for the views that you picked here?
I think the views that we picked were all kind of capturing the vastness of Wrigley, how special it is when you look up at it. Because the fans are always looking down, right? They're always on top of us, especially at Wrigley, because it's so old and so steep, everything from the bleachers to the upper deck. So we wanted to really give that perspective of what it looks like to look up at the fans, up at the scoreboards, and kind of that looming feeling that Wrigley possesses.
And if people want to get a look at the artwork, they can at WrigleyThroughMyEyes.com. We should mention that a portion of the proceeds will benefit Cubs Charities, that provides quality baseball and softball programming engaging Chicago's children and youth. When we heard Theo for, what was it, 71 minutes after the season, so a raw, unvarnished opportunity where he answered every single question and was emotional about the way the season ended, it was clear that his thoughts were informed strongly by the exit interviews that he conducted with players, you among them. Mm-hmm. How would you describe your exit interview this year?
I think that we were all so frustrated with the way everything ended last year that it gave us a chance to really be honest with each other, for everybody to kind of be honest about the way things ended and really look to how we could improve. I think that when I was here in 17, you know, we had a really good run at it, but it was like everybody was kind of beat. And last year it was like, well, that's not what we're used to. That's not how it's supposed to end. So for us to really get upset about something and to be able to have that honest discussion, I think is only going to help us moving forward.
Theo said, Ian, that the offense broke somewhere along the lines, and in the second half specifically. Did you guys have a feeling while it was going on that it was broken, you were trying to rescue it or trying to fix it, or is that something that you just see afterward?
I think one of the things that people overlook is how good we were in the first half.
Yeah.
We were one of the best offenses, if not the best offense in baseball in the first half, and we were producing at a pretty incredible clip. So I think it was kind of a slow digression from there. And then it kind of looked back at the end of the year after putting our heads down, getting underwater and trying to finish that thing off. You turn around and you say, oh God, something went terribly wrong. But we were such a productive offense the first half, that at the end of the year, when you look back at it, the numbers weren't terrible, but it was kind of those last, you know, 30, 40, 50 games where it was like, we could have done something better.
There's yet another new voice in the cage as you put the work in. Anthony Iapoche replaces Chili Davis. And when we sat down, Ian, at the Brickhouse Tavern, the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern, mm-hmm. last summer, it was, and we came away when we were talking about Chili Davis thinking we didn't really learn much about process and approach. And I thought we were just trying to sort of get in your head a little bit and figure out what that relationship was like. I don't know how well you know Anthony and how this relationship is going to work, but what are you looking forward to with having another guy, another new set of eyes on your swing?
I'm really excited. I got a chance to work with Post. When I got drafted in 15, he was the minor league hitting coordinator. So I got a chance to work with him for about 6 months before he left to go to Texas. And actually our assistant, Tramiel Sledge, he was my first professional hitting coach in short season A in Eugene, Oregon. So I have a relationship with both those guys. They're both awesome, super positive, super upbeat. So I couldn't be more excited for that direction.
Is there a confidence that comes with, I mean, it kind of sounds like you're getting back to what you used to do in talking about coaches that brought you up into the minors, into the majors. Is there confidence in that that helps spur the approach some, as opposed to, you know, trying something new and figuring it out, you know, in reverse order?
100%. I think those guys, we've had a really good relationship and they know me as a baseball player. They know my swing. So to be able, I've been working with them all offseason, connecting with them all offseason, and to be able to work with those guys and have a consistent approach every day and just the positivity they're going to bring, it's going to make a huge impact on this team.
Do you have a preference for how you're deployed this year, considering you can play infield and outfield and there's always moving parts on a Joe Maddon team? Is there a way that you think your game can be optimized?
Yeah, my preference is just to be out there helping the team, be out there, be in the lineup as much as I possibly can, and help the team in any way possible. That's, you know, that's what I've been trying to do since I came up a couple of years ago, and I'm going to continue to do that. Just get me in the lineup and let me help.
How much time off do you take? Do you like put the bats down for a couple of weeks and just get away from everything, or do you are you like Bryant where you're just you wake up and you get in the cage and you stay in the cage all day?
It was pretty quick for me this year. I think with the early exit and kind of we had a month more off season than we knew what to do with. So I took a couple of weeks right after the season just to get my body back to status quo, and then really I jumped back in the cage and jumped back to working out pretty quick.
What was wrong with your body?
I mean, just 162 plus spring training. It's a long year. You just kind of let your body relax and kind of reset. You know, you're pretty beat up after, what is it, eight straight months that we go for. So you just got to let your body reset, and then you can get back in, you know, shed all the bad weight and kind of rebuild yourself for 4 months until spring training.
Talking with Ian Happ here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Ian, what would fans be surprised about if they got to read some of the group texts between you and, I don't know, like Kyle or Anthony, however many, how many people, how many Cubs players are on one single group text that you guys share around, no coaches included?
I think they would be surprised that how quickly the texts come in when you have 20-some guys in a group text.
Okay.
I don't know if there's anything super interesting we talk about, but everybody stays connected, and we have such a good group of guys, and everybody cares about each other. So I think it's pretty special what we have in the clubhouse.
I just thought it was interesting because Joe mentioned the other night that he's reached out to you and to Kyle, I think, more than he would have otherwise, is how he put it, more than he would reach out otherwise in an offseason to players. So I figure, you know, there's a text maybe between the three of you, or a thread or something like that, that you guys have been chatting about this off season.
Yeah, Joe and I have had a couple phone calls. We've gone back and forth over email, over text, you know, swing videos and everything. So it's been good. It's been great to be in touch with him, hear about his off season, hear about his tour of Italy. You know, it's things like that. Just having that open relationship and being able to really care about each other like we do in the clubhouse. That's what puts a good product on the field.
One of the thematic statements that Theo hit on was urgency and intensity. It was kind of a rare meatball turn for Theo Epstein to say, hey, you know, if you're the better team, instead of taking two out of three, sweep the series and go for it. We heard the fan in Theo come out a little bit, and then when we know it was made clear to Joe Maddon that, you know, they want him a little bit more granular in his teaching, be more of a teacher and get out there and coach more, and he's excited for that. When we talked to you, you talked about your emotional level and where you have to be and how you got to keep things sort of tamped down, because you can't let the highs get too high so the lows don't get too low. What would an increased intensity level overall mean for your approach in a 6 month baseball season?
I don't think it's a lack of intensity, that's for sure. I think that it's just outward emotion. There's no lack of intensity. There's no lack of caring or enjoyment of the game. It's just it doesn't show outwardly. I've been loving this game for as long as I can remember, and being super, I think sometimes to a fault, intense. You guys just don't get a chance to see it because you're not in my head.
So you think that this is something that a team or a coach or a culture, can it work? I mean, can Theo get what he wants from this? Do you think that it can actually translate from that kind of desire to evidence on the field in some way?
I think Theo was really giving the sentiment of the players when he said that stuff in the interview. It's when we've talked to each other in the off season that's been kind of the same grand scale message. Is, you know, we're a really good baseball team. We have a lot of really, really good players, and we got punched in the mouth a little bit last year.
Last thing for you, Ian. I'm just curious, what has the overall, if I could talk about these group texts, how do you feel the suspension of Addison Russell as it goes on, if, in fact, for however long he remains a Cub, is there going to be any effect? Are there any conflicting feelings? Is it something that will need to be managed, or is it simply something you guys aren't talking about?
Addison's got a lot of personal stuff to work on before he's back with us, and I think that we're all very aware of that. We're all going to be there to support him if he's taking the proper steps, and that's our job as teammates to welcome him back if in fact he does everything he needs to do to be back on the field with us.
The project is WrigleyThroughMyEyes.com. The artwork is available there. It will debut this weekend at the Cubs convention. If you check out the video, you can see it's really, really cool stuff with artist Patrick Vail, and it will raise some money for Cubs charities as well, inspired by our guest, Ian Happ. Ian, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Too. That's Cub Ian Happ.
Well said.
Very
well said.
Nicely done. He knew there were boxes to check. I'm sure every player has been sent several lines, several points.
Doesn't mean you have to play the tune.
Correct.
Or he just inherently knows the right thing.
That is certainly, yes. And
well done.
And indeed, for a fact, the Cubs have been instructed by many people to handle this in ways that are consistent with how they want to present themselves. So what are your takeaways from that?
Well, you could hear it from Ian Happ. Just had him on the Bernstein and McKnight show a couple of minutes ago. You could hear that the frustration, the intensity, the, as you kind of called it, the meatball level for Theo in that 71-minute exit press conference after the season was over, that was a reflection. Ian said, that was a reflection of how the players felt when that season ended.
That makes sense.
It really does. When you look at the changes, too, that have been made to the Cubs coaching staff, when you look at some of the changes that haven't happened to the roster as it stands, whether that's because of financial issues or because of the ability the Cubs have to rely on a young core to rebound from years that were subpar. You know, Ian wants a better season in 19 than he had in 18. Schwarber wants the same thing. You can go down the list. Albert Almora, Addison Russell, if he plays. I don't think he should, but if he does play, the Cubs certainly want more offense from him. I mean, the list is long of young players, sub-25, 26 players that need better seasons, and they seem to be the guys who were telling the front office that.
I heard this, too, and this has to dovetail with the conversations we had, and even Ian's body language when he was talking about Chili Davis last year. The fact that he mentions that Iaposi and Termell Sledge, their positivity. He used that word. He specifically mentioned how they reinforce positively.
Well, listen, it's not a secret that Chili Davis wanted to kill launch angle, and it's a catch-all term, but you've got writers covering the Mets right now, letting everybody know that Chili's new approach that kills launch angle for situational hitting or line drives or whatever he wants to tell you, that's not where the front office wants to put its faith. It just, you heard it from Theo, you heard it from some of the hitters. That move was made for a real specific reason. When the offense broke in the second half of the year, that seems to be because of a continued effort to hit the way he wanted him to hit. I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
The Cubs thought that. Obviously, the Cubs players said enough, and Happ among them, obviously. Look, let's call it what it is. I mean, we know who the guys are who matter here. We can look at the numbers. Look at them. Look at Contreras. Look at Schwarber. Look at Happ.
The controllable guys who need to rebound are the guys that matter most in 2019. That and a healthy Chris Bryant. Don't get it twisted.
They're the customer. And if it's positivity, if it's simply, so, like he said, someone who knows their swing. He said Joe has been sending him videos.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that Joe is involved. Joe's a hitting coach.
Yeah, sometimes, I've said this before, we kind of forget Joe's resume for his reputation sometimes. I mean, he is a teacher and a damn good one. He is a hitting coach and has been a damn good one before, too. So that's something I think you have to keep in mind as this 2019 season starts. But, you know, the other hand is this. I know how ball players will talk about getting back to things, about what kind of, that's why I asked Ian about the confidence in going back to what got you there. It's not a panacea. It doesn't fix all that ails you. It just doesn't. But there's something to be said about an athlete going into an offseason, going into spring training with a confidence as opposed to a question about how am I supposed to do this again? I've been hitting this way for 20-some years. It got me into college. It got me the full ride. It got me through Cincy. All this stuff. Like, now I get to go do that stuff again. I feel confident. Now, like, tweak from confidence. Don't tweak from question.
If you see me wincing, and I am, it's because everything you're saying was exactly what we talked about with Gordon Beckham. And ultimately, he went back, and at length, I mean, these long, involved, specific conversations, you know, even off the air, mm-hmm. he was showing me what he was doing with his hands. He's like, you know, I got too much top hand here. I was talking with Paulie. I got to get this activated here at the same time. And in college, I was like this, and they had me doing this. And he's explaining everything. And he said, I'm finally comfortable. I'm getting back to what got me here. And it just wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I think there's a difference in talent evaluation at some point, isn't there?
Yeah, it's a first round pick.
Yeah, yes,
college star.
Yeah, as a 4-year senior and a guy who hit a lot of breaking balls with a big old loop in his hands, yep. even when he was doing what he was doing to make him so successful at the collegiate level, like there's a difference in talent evaluation where the track record of the Cubs to pick up first round bats and get them to the major leagues as quickly as they have, and seemingly in some cases stall, that's the disconnect. It's not the identification of the talent.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to curse Ian Happ with the invocation.
Curses don't exist, so that's fine.
Right. No, I'm not trying to damn him, whatever you want to say, or somehow diminish this. I'm just bringing up that it always sounds great to have a guy say, yeah, back to a comfort, you know, back to a place. But sometimes a guy just – Major League Baseball is really hard.
It's incredibly difficult.
It's incredibly hard. And Ron Washington. And at that point, you know, it's just you've exhausted everything you could do. But it does sound to me like because he'd been there before, because he has succeeded mm-hmm. at the major league level. And we know he's got his eye is terrific. And he has, despite being, you know, barely, if he is 6 feet tall, I think that's really generous. I think he's maybe an inch and a half taller than I am.
I don't think he's 6 feet.
But he does have a lot of power. You just want to see this thing start to come together and see it manifest itself a little bit. He had, what do you have, 20 some home runs first year? He was part of that 20 club.
He was.
But you need it. That's got to be there for this team. Not a fad.
He had 24 in his first season. 15 last year.
I mean, it's there. Once you've done it, you know you can probably do it again. So I don't want to say that this is a Gordon Beckham kind of thing. It was top of mind hearing the words that you used about getting back to something comfortable.
No, and I can't stop you from feeling that way. I get it. Ian's on base percentage too jumped almost 30 points from year one to year two, despite a power drop. I mean, you're talking about a good eye. You talk about the identification of pitch, the knowledge of a strike zone. Like, those things also go hand in hand.
Yeah, you just want to get those things locked
back
in.
Right. I mean, if you don't have that kind of identification, if you're Gordon Beckham swinging at what he was swinging at, it doesn't matter what kind of changes or getting back to what – you can go back to T-ball. You're not going to hit that thing.
You've got a shot to win $1,000 in cash next. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, you'll have a keyword that might make you richer on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It is time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. This hour's keyword is FIRST. Text FIRST to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is FIRST to 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Don't text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. Raise your hand if you had no idea Carol Channing was alive.
I mean, she's not anymore.
No, she's dead now.
She's dead now.
Right, but
she died, what, yesterday?
Yes, and I had no idea.
Good for her, but I lost $10, one of those things.
I didn't really know much about her other than she was the old lady with a gravel voice and the giant glasses that would occasionally be on my television.
Those are the things that I knew.
She was on the Muppet Show
She did Hello Dolly, right, on stage for
Dolly.
Quite a long time.
Was she Dolly? Or she sang about Dolly?
No, she sang about Dolly. I think
she said hello to Dolly. I don't know if she was Dolly or not. Actually, she was Salvador Dolly. That's what was really strange.
That makes her being alive really a win for everybody. I didn't see that coming. What a twist.
I had no idea. I would have bet a lot of money that she was dead. And now I'd win because she is.
Well, no one would take that bet now.
Well, somebody
those
would.
Are the kind of bets you would make. I can't get you to bet on anything. Even the little harmless stuff where you want to wear a Duke hoodie or something as your guys are playing Syracuse against Parkins or something and you're not in on any of that. But you would bet if a dead person is dead.
Probably.
You would take those numbers.
Yeah, that's one you don't know. Or somebody who has been just like, I don't know, like frozen or something, and they put him in a home.
Only
and
mostly dead.
Only mostly dead. That means something.
That's life. A push, is yes. What that is.
Okay, just making sure. Yeah, the a lot of reaction to Ian Happ's comments, just how thoughtful he is. Yeah, he's a really interesting, thoughtful guy. He really is.
I think he plays that way. I think he, you know, not like, you know, as the ball is hit and he tracks down a fly ball in the alley or something like that. I mean, from like day to day, the stuff in between games, that kind of headspace sort of thing. He mentioned how intense he is and how even keel he's got to project in order to stop himself from sliding into the very bottom or heading up to the very top of his emotional scale.
He said he can't be Javier Baez, in other words.
There
are very few people that can exist outwardly and emote the way and sort of live everything outwardly like he does. That's and meanwhile, this our winter salvation, and we hadn't gotten to this yet. If you are not making sure that somewhere in whatever social media feed you have, if you're not making sure that you're following enough baseball people that Latin country winter ball videos find their way to you. They make you all just warm all over. If you're doing it wrong, if you're not at least following people that are reposting, sometimes the little messages are in Spanish and you may not be able to understand them or you can kind of figure out. But the videos of Williams Astudillo
speaks to everybody.
The bat flip of Fernando Tatis Jr., the way baseball is being played in Venezuela and the Dominican Republic right now, players you know playing a game you love in a way that just makes it awesome, make sure these videos are part of your day.
That's the, you know, I've watched those videos and can't help but think about what's coming. We mentioned this earlier, what's coming in February. Each year, since the expanded replay started, there's been some sort of rules adjustment, or rule change in February by MLB. Some have been good, some have been bad, some have been followed, some haven't been.
They're all ignoring the root of the problem.
But it's
of
all, it's all pace of play stuff, and you know we want to get the ball in motion faster and the strike zone and all that kind of jazz. But what you need is a green lighting of celebratory baseball. You know, you need to get to a scenario where fans in the stadium or at home are allowed to live and die with each pitch because the players themselves get to do that. I mean, there's a relationship between the two of them. Hap's talking about it with the art, as corny as that sounds, but like you feel it there. There's a connection between the game and the fan, and that's gone away quite a bit, I think, in the way we consume sports, because you sit on your couch, you have this gorgeous picture, and it's gigantic. I mean, the screen's 80 inches or whatever. You're as comfortable as possible. You've got your favorite beverage and your favorite food. But there's a connection there to be had. Like, that's part of the romance of the thing.
I have to figure out where Williams Astudillo fits in, like, our Marvel universe of baseball here. But what he is. Because he's going to be the MVP of the Venezuelan League, it looks like.
Oh, yeah.
With the numbers he's putting up. If you remember, the last time we saw him, the last time we mentioned him on this show, the Twins utility man,
That's going a little... I mean, Williams is a first baseman slash catcher.
He played everywhere, didn't he?
Yes.
He did. Was it a triple or was it an inside-the-park home run? Was it a triple and an error?
I believe it was a triple.
And he is a large man.
And yeah, Baseball Reference has Williams Astudillo at 5'9", 225.
Please.
And I think that's generous.
And he has the giant head of frizzy hair.
It's fantastic.
He looks like Gritty. Right?
A little. I mean, he has dyed, you know, he's done the sun in
the
sort of thing.
Tips.
Whatever it is. Yeah, there's an orangish, yellowish kind of hue.
Right. I mean, he looks, if Gritty were to take actual earthly form, he would look something like Williams Astudillo.
I don't know, he'd swing like Williams.
But the look on his face, the close-up of him as he's running around, and then you see in this Venezuelan game where he does an Adrian Beltre home run down on the back knee and then waits while kneeling, looking like Rodan's The Thinker as he's waiting for the ball to clear the fence in the batter's box the entire time before he gets up and runs around the base.
He's also the guy that 2 years ago while he was playing the minor leagues gave us the no-look pickoff at first base.
Yes, he was!
That was before
You're
everybody
right.
realized he was the same
guy. I forgot that.
It's the same guy. He's that kind of dude. He's the thing all of us need this offseason.
Yeah, he brightens your winter for you. We have the Midday Midway coming up. I have a fast food hack that will blow your mind. I have something worse than your fishing boat catching on fire. And I have an NBA trend that should have been a trend a long time ago.
Got a movie review, some notes about top quarterback recruits in college, and a story so stupid that you can't fathom it actually exists. That's Midday Midway next. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.